So those are the two programs I know most about. But I know that there's lots of other ones out there, and all you really have to do is research, 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 research.
Great. So you should really take his advice, because he has been applying to many of these jobs, so he knows what he's talking about for sure. And we would like to remind you that we do have an email account where you can ask us questions or give us suggestions for future episodes. So if you have any questions that about applying for jobs in teaching English as a foreign language, I'm sure that Craig wouldn't mind taking a look at it. I'm going to talk about two organizations that I haven't volunteered for them, but I know people that have. And being an anthropologist, obviously, planning to show, I was thinking, volunteering abroad, it always sounds like such a good intention thing, but sometimes, even if people have good intentions, it might not work out for the communities that you go volunteer for. But Operation Smile and Habitat for Humanity, I think, are quite serious organizations. I'm going to begin by talking about Operation Smile, which is probably best for people that are studying medicine. And that's also another thing that I've found researching for this show, that it's very easy to find something that is very specific for one's career. So dentistry, medicine especially, have a lot of opportunities for volunteering. So if you are a medic, good for you. Operation Smile began in 1982. Whoa, even with glasses, I'm blind. 1982, and they operate in over 60 countries. What they do is that they give free surgery to young children born with cleft palates, and it's a very successful organization, mainly because the surgery is not only very quick to do, but it's also quite relatively cheap. So it's a good experience for those studying medicine to see how the surgery is done. But then people that I've met that have been involved in these projects were just there to entertain the children or speak to the mothers. So it's not necessarily that you need to be interested in medicine to volunteer with them. They have different projects. So as I said, the medical projects, the care centers where there is other issues being addressed, not only the cleft palate. And then there's also education and training for medics. They are, as I said, working in over 60 countries. I will post the link to the information about the countries later on this afternoon. But for instance, you know, there's things as varied as Vietnam to Nicaragua to Rwanda, Peru, China, Brazil. So really, I think there's definitely scope for anyone that is interested to take part. I know a couple of people that have done it, and they were really happy. I think it's a good cause, basically, and it's hopefully not something that is just a consumer good for people that don't know what to do with their time after graduation or in a gap year. Then Habitat for Humanity, I'm sure many people have heard of it. It was begun in 1965, and it's part, well, I don't think it's part of, but it does take into account the development goals. Millennium Development Goals. There we go. Thank you, Craig. Yes, they are kind of formed around this initiative, and it basically is about building houses, creating shelters for people that have been affected by some natural disaster or that are just very living in very deprived areas. They too work in many countries, over 70, it says here on their website, so much scope there as well to choose from. I met one girl from my old high school who went to Brazil to do it, and she felt very good about it. And then my high school volunteered with them in Mexico. And I think, from what I understand, although I did not take part, it's a very good way of integrating volunteers within the communities, because you're working together with the people that you're making the houses for, which is, I think it's beneficial. Obviously, you don't just go there as an outsider and you get your hands dirty. So I think it's worth taking a look. I will also post a link to their webpage later on this afternoon. For the meantime, we're going to... Craig, you said you wanted to mention something.
Yeah. So also, I know that it might seem daunting or whatever. I know it certainly does to me. But the main problem with finding a job is that there are so many organizations out there that... you know, are advertising themselves to everyone, but really you can also just look on your own at an organization that you like instead of going through recruitment. Like I know, as Fran said with the medics, that the National Hospital in Palau employs several volunteers as help around the hospital and they desperately need it. So, you know, widen your scope. You can always check out down in weird countries like Palau. I know that even though they don't pay you, they do try and help you out in any way that they can. The other interns in my office got bananas from the Attorney General, just as free food and everything like that. Also,
I think there's more opportunity, right? If you look at an obscure countries.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if I was to do an internship at some big consulting firm, then I would probably just be pushing papers all day. But down there, I was actually proofreading national legislation, doing research for the Elections Commission, and other things like that. So you really get to really apply what you've learned instead of, you know, just filling out papers necessarily, even though I did do some of that, of course.
Yeah.
So I would really, you know, push anyone who is getting a little bit frustrated to just look at the different opportunities that are out there and, you know, just come up with the weirdest place that you can think of and just research what you might want to do there because there's always possibilities.
Yes, absolutely. And also I think it helps if you have a clear idea of what you want to do, because I think it might be a little silly if you apply for something to be a medic and then apply for something to teach English. Then
yeah.
But
yeah, of course.
Yeah. What else? I don't know. I want to still emphasize, as an anthropologist, don't just do this to be in the place. Also do it with the consciousness that you are creating bonds with the people that you visit in the communities, and it's important that you respect that and that you go with, I know you will go with the best intentions, but best intentions sometimes are just not enough. So just reflect.
Stay strong.
keep thinking about what you're doing and how you're doing it. I think within the university, besides the Argentina thing you've already mentioned, have there been other talks about...
Yeah, I've heard at the Argentina talk, I heard that Japan has this program, JET.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called, it must stand for like Japanese English teaching.
Oh,
or Japan,
okay.
English teaching. And they came up from, the consulate came up from Edinburgh a while ago and gave a talk about the different opportunities that they offer to come over and teach in Japan.
That's pretty cool. I just Googled this. If you just Google JET with all capitals, it comes up. JET upper-uk.org. It looks pretty legit.
Yeah, it is. And I also know of some teachers from JET who came to Palau. And the good thing with JET, what I've heard, is that they actually pay kind of a Japanese pay standard, which
is high.
So if you're actually looking to save money, then that's good. Whereas, you know, maybe teaching English in Madagascar for no pay or getting paid, you know, £200 a month to teach in China is not. So I know that I think that it's a very popular program, and I've also heard that it's quite bureaucratic, as in American students who want to teach actually have to go to the U.S. to interview.
Wow.
I'm not really sure what that's about, but that's what I heard from the woman in the Career Center about that.
Cool. I've heard of the volunteering in Uganda. I don't know what the organization is. It One World?
I'm not sure. Sorry.
It's okay. It's just, I know that you're always on the ball about these things. I just delete the emails. I think it is with One World that you can volunteer in either Malawi or Uganda. But I will do proper research and possibly post links about it later on in our page. I was just looking here at the JET webpage, and apparently the application process for the 2013 JET program has now closed, unfortunately. But for those of you who will not be graduating this year, or even that will but don't know what they'll be doing in 2014, the new application opens up in October, so keep checking, I guess.
Yeah, I've also seen through the Fulbright scholarship in the US that they actually fund lots of students to go abroad. Most of the countries have language requirements, but a few don't, so that's always a great way. I guess the point from all these suggestions that we've been giving is that there's just an immense amount of knowledge out there, and just, you know, again, stay strong.
Yeah.
Go through all of it and figure out what you want to do.
Absolutely, especially because, as I say, I think there are some of them which are just kind of commercialized, just organizations that want to get some money out of you and don't care about you or the communities. So that's something to watch out for. Although it is very difficult to perceive this through, especially through internet. So it's good that Craig has been talking to all these people that come to university. I think that's a great resource to take advantage of.
Yeah, yeah, that's for sure. And that's also maybe another reason why going specifically to an organization instead of like a recruitment agency is good, because I mean, obviously, if you're talking directly to the hospital that needs, you know, help, or to the Ministry of Education that also, you know, that needs someone to come in and teach a class, then it's coming from the local side of things, not just someone trying to make money.
Absolutely. So our guests seem to have arrived. So Lisa, why don't you tell us a bit more about this wonderful song that we were just listening to, and then we can just dive into the Ecuador experience.
Okay. Is this good for the mic? Yeah. So the song was from a band from Otavalo. This was like, it's a town in Ecuador in the north, and they're half an hour away from where I did my volunteering. And they're basically an indigenous group, and they're singing in Quechua and in Spanish. And they're basically expressing how difficult for them it is to have both their like past identity and their current identity. So, yeah.
That's fantastic. So tell us, how did you find out about the... Well, first of all, what organization did you volunteer for, and how did you find out about it?
So basically, I started off knowing that I wanted to volunteer. And then I was like, okay, that's a bit weird. I'm going away for 1 year. So I searched in a way that I could find my organization, that I could find an organization that was in Frankfurt where I stayed, that I could see it kind of directly. So I found an organization and I went to their office and spoke to them. And in the end, they set me up with a Swiss organization called Cielo Azul. And I worked with them for 1 year, and I worked as an English teacher in a rural town in Ecuador.
Oh, fantastic. So would you go back? I know that you might be going back this summer to do actual field work for anthropology.
Yeah. Definitely. Like, I really enjoyed my stay a lot. And I feel like I did build up many relationships with, especially the students that I taught in a primary school. So going back is definitely, I'm excited about it, so I can see how everyone is, basically.
How do you think it enriched your life, the life of the community?
I feel like this might be a trick question. I think I definitely learned a lot from it. I didn't know much about living in such a different place when I came, and it was very different. I mean, I slept in a little guinea pig stable. There was no bed, and it was really cold. And it was just like, kind of, I guess, a situation that I'd never encountered before. Then in the end, that was normal. So just appreciating that you don't need a lot to kind of live and be okay. I think I definitely learned. About how it enriched the community, I mean, it's questionable. I did work in a school and an established institution, and I helped one English teacher that was there. So we worked together as a team, and I think the English teacher unfortunately didn't speak English very well. So I feel like I was able to contribute in giving English classes, definitely.
Well, thank you very much for your input. If you wouldn't mind later sharing, maybe if there's a link to the organization on our page, that would be really great for anyone that might be interested. So Craig, take it from here.
Okay. So we
introduce our guests.
Sorry. So first of all, we had have Therese Rudebeck from Sweden, and she volunteered in Ghana. And we also have Pia Noel, who is my flatmate,
hey.
And she volunteered in India. So we'll be asking them how they found out about their organizations and why they chose these to begin with. So let's start with Therese.
Hello.
Hello. How did you find out about the organization that you volunteered for?
Actually, I found out about them through a career fair. It's like a career fair you have here with all the different jobs that you can apply to, but for universities. And there were numerous of these volunteer organizations there too, so they were one of them. And they are called Projects Abroad. I think they're actually a British organization from the beginning.
Okay. And so why did you pick Ghana over another country?
Well, I looked at Nepal a lot too, but in the end, Ghana was the country with a project that I wanted to go to, and they had a really nice picture of a beach, which I know shouldn't influence, but it did. I was young.
That's okay. It was before we got the lecture from Stan Franklin about, you know, no, that's bad.
We were just talking before that sometimes it's easy to volunteer when you have a kind of a clear career path in mind. And I remember you might have chosen that because you wanted to become a veterinarian.
Yeah, I did a project in veterinary medicine, basically worked as a veterinary assistant. And I guess my primary objective with going was to see if I actually wanted to do this and get some experience.
So how long were you there?
I was there for 2 months over the summer.
And how do you think, you know, you enriched the community and how did it enrich your life?
Well, I must admit that I probably didn't really enrich their community at all. It didn't enrich my life. I mean, I got to see a new country and I got to see a new continent, which was really nice. And I lived at a wonderful host family and met a lot of new friends. But I wouldn't really say that it enriched their community, especially with the project that I did. I mean, since I didn't have any veterinary education in the background, I obviously couldn't contribute that much. So it was more of a learning experience.
Okay, yeah. So how long did you go? Sorry, I already asked that. Would you go back?
Well, I would definitely go back to Ghana.
Okay.
I wouldn't go back to do a project with the organization again. They were really good for when I went. And I was quite young, I was only 18. So it was good to go with an organization that provided me with a host family and, you know, security network. But I would not go back to a similar organization again. But I would definitely like to go back to Ghana and also more of Africa.
Okay. Thank you. Pia.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
So how did you find out about the organization that you volunteered for?
So I volunteered for an organization called Shanti Dara. And they're placed in Vishakhapatnam, which is, if you know where Mumbai is, it's the exact same height, but the other coast. And I was there for 4 months. And I heard about them through... So it was a friend of my mom's, basically, that started this really, really small NGO. And so when I was graduating from high school... And I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and because it takes me a while to decide what I want to do, I was talking to, like, you know, several friends of my mom's and all of this, and then this woman, Clara, said that if I was interested, I could do this. So it was kind of like an opportunity that came to me, rather. And so I got really excited and went for it.
Okay. So why did you choose India?
Well, okay, I mean, this friend happened to be in India. I did have a bit of a fixation for the country before anyway.
Just a bit.
Just a bit. I like everything about it. So I was lucky.
Okay, so what were you doing while you were there?
So I was there, Clara started this organization with Georgie, who's the guy that I lives with and who manages, like, the children's hostel there. And I was supposed to, I mean, they don't take volunteers really because they don't need us. Because they, what they need, they, So let me just explain a bit what the organization does. So they have a hostel with 32 kids, and they take these children from different tribes from all over Andhra Pradesh, which is a region in India. And the idea is that they take these kids and they put them together in a hostel so that they live well, like brothers and sisters, no matter the caste and no matter religions. And then they get money from abroad, and they get, so they basically go to school in India, and then they live in this hostel with each other. So basically I went and I was going to help them. Well, I did help them like with their homework and help with everyday activities and things like this. But they had everything in place already, because they had like a private teacher, like a teacher that would go to help them already with homework and all this. So I was like a added bonus or not to whatever was in place.
Okay. So how long were you there?
I was there for 4 months. I was there from August to November 2008.
Okay. And now the dreaded question.
Sorry?
Now the dreaded question.
You can ask it. You can go ahead.
How did it enrich your life in the communities?
The communities, I actually think that it was, sometimes it was harder for them when I was there, because it was the first, not the first time, it was like the second time that they had like this a white person over there. So all the neighbors thought that, you know, this hostel all of a sudden had more money for some reason. So then we would get people coming and like asking, oh, can you take my kid as well? And like, we need money for this and this. So I obviously helped the kids with their daily activities. And then especially I think what helped the most probably was my conversations with Joji, who was the guy organizing, because we had like huge debates about just differences of like, we were doing this business plan together, and we had this huge debate on whether it was more important to have the children in uniforms or for them to have shoes. And I was like, come on, like shoes. Like, why, you know? And then all of a sudden he gave me this whole argument of how the uniform was really important for them because they felt like, you know, they just felt better in uniforms, and that they actually didn't really need shoes because it wasn't that cold and they didn't use shoes anywhere. So we had these exchanges that were quite interesting. I think that was good for Joji. I don't know about the kids and all of that, but yeah.
All right. Well, I'm sure that rubbed off on the kids as well.
Yeah, hopefully.
So would you go back? Maybe would you go back to that organization, or would you go back to India?
Yeah, I already went back to the organization since I left the first time. But it was really just to visit them. They're like a second family. So I went with my ex-boyfriend when we were going to go travel around India. And I don't think I would go back to help them because, as I said, I don't think it was a huge help. I will continue doing fundraising things for them and things like this. And if I go to India, which I hope I will, then I obviously I'm going to go and say hi. And I mean, we have a good relationship. So.
All right.
This is a question that I'd like to ask all of you. Uh-huh. What do you think it is important to have a connection when you're not in the place? I don't know, for instance, you've been planning to do your field work there, so obviously you have a connection there, although you're here.
Can you specify your question? What do you mean with connection?
Like Pia says, that she will still, even if she's not there physically, she's still trying to fundraise for this hostel. Besides this plan of doing some fieldwork, have you had any other type of contact with the community or project?
I went back 2 summers ago just to visit, basically. But I also do have a kind of exchange, like, program going on with my homeschool in Germany, where I go to the German school and I talk about... I basically fundraise for scholarships in my village, and that's worked quite well because the situation is in that village in Ecuador, most of the times, like, not a lot of people can afford to go to high school, so they just finish school when they're in seventh grade, so like 12. And basically there's one scholarship every year that my organization provides, and I've been helping out with those scholarships. So yeah, I think it is nice if you can. Like, and if you also know where the money goes. I know, like, it's really difficult, but I know, like, for my organization, they don't give anyone any money, but they take the children to buy the school uniform and to buy the school materials and to pay the fees. So, like, they're actually in place and they have control over the funds that are sent over, and I think that's important because I think, like, if you would just give the money straight away, like, other things might happen, which with the money, because in that very moment the money is more important or, like, used for other things. Yeah. So,
thanks. Tess?
Well, I think my experience was a little bit different because this organization really aims at, well, providing a good experience for the people who are participating rather than the projects.
Mm.
I mean, they are superficially doing something good, but it really is one of those gap year experiences rather than enriching and volunteering. Which means that, I mean, for me, I still have contact with my host family sporadically. But above that, not really.
Fair enough. Well, thank you very much for all your time for coming today. I hope you enjoyed it. We sure did. And we are going to send them off on a song that has been provided to us by Therese. Do you want to introduce it yourself? Or?
Yeah, sure. It's by an artist called P-Square, and he's a Nigerian artist. He's really, really big in Africa, and the song is called Do Me. which I know is not really that great of a title.
But the lyrics are so much better.
Uh-huh. And it played all the time when I was in Ghana. So for me, this is the sound of Ghana.
Thank you. And we're back. Our guests loved the studio so much that they're still here. So yay, welcome back. Craig, why don't you tell our audience what we're going to talk about next week?
So we realized after the last show that we didn't, we sounded very, very St. Andrews. So we decided to focus a little bit more local traveling. So we're going to talk about different things you can do around St. Andrews in the rest of Fife, as well as other cities around the UK like Manchester, Bristol, London.
Durham. I'm going to talk about Durham, Cambridge, Oxford, which probably is reinforcing the stereotype that we're trying to avoid. But nonetheless, some of the places. I'm sure that we can ask some of our friends if they'd like to come on and talk to us about places in Scotland.
Yeah.
Because I know for a fact that the Isle of Skye must be fantastic.
It's really beautiful.
Ooh, we have someone who's been.
Skye is the loveliest island ever.
Tell us.
We were really lucky. We went and it was really sunny for the whole week that we went. And I don't think that happens a lot of times, but there's lochs and seals and you can camp anywhere and people are really, like, nice and they take you along. We hitchhiked and everyone was super friendly to us. So I highly recommend it.
There you go. Cheap way to get there and lovely place to go to. So we hope you'll tune in next week. We are going to leave you guys with two songs, one from Pia, who unfortunately couldn't summon up a song from India, but she chose another one of her favorites. And then
wait a minute. You guys talked about the mood at the beginning of the program, saying that you were not in the greatest mood. So this one is just one that
it's mood. And also, if you listen to the lyrics, it's saying, don't worry, something will happen. So if you're getting worried about jobs or dissertations or anything like that, just listen to it and be happy.
Okay, I didn't know that. I'm sorry. It's really difficult for me to multitask with election results and buzz boxes and myriad. And then we have one song from Craig, who, poor thing, hasn't had a chance to play any of his songs today.
It's very sad.
I know. So we will play one after that, but you won't hear our lovely voices anymore. Thank you to everyone who tuned in. Thank you, Tess, Pia, and Lisa, for coming. And we will hear you next week. Thank you very much.